Welcome to this episode of Surf Sessions. Today, our guest is Glenn Gao, a CEO, coach, keynote speaker on AI, and a board member. So, we've got some interesting perspectives here to share today. Thank you for joining us, Glenn.
My pleasure. I'm looking forward to our conversation.
Yeah, me too. You're our first CEO coach in the series. And I think it'd be great if you could start out by telling us just a little bit about, like, what does a CEO coach do?
Well, think of it this way. Every great athlete in the world has a coach. In fact, they have many coaches. And the reason they have a coach is they recognize that even though they might be at the top of their game, a coach helps them become better. And so for CEOs who have the mentality that I can become a better CEO, a coach is an invaluable tool. And my job as a coach is to help identify the things that the coach can grow into. So it turns out that roughly in the venture capital world, roughly 60% of CEOs get fired within a 5-year period. The main reason for that is they can't grow the company as fast as investors would like them to. So when you ask yourself, why is that the case? The main reason is that the CEO themselves cannot scale. See, they might be the perfect CEO with the perfect set of skills when they start the company or when they first come into the company if they're brought in later. But in order to scale, they have to grow themselves. And my job is to help them grow so that they can become effective at every stage of growth for the company.
Yeah, and it's really interesting, this idea of helping CEOs to develop these skills. I think, particularly we talk a lot with new founders, first-time founders, people who are really going through this, learning everything in real time. And, there is just so much to learn outside of just, I mean, obviously figuring out how to build, grow, and scale a business is a huge amount of work in and of itself. But then there's all those other skills that go into being an effective CEO that people are learning in tandem while they are doing all these other things. I'm curious, do you mostly work with newer CEOs? Do you work with established companies? Are there certain types of people who tend to benefit more from CEO coaching?
So the easiest way to answer that question is the people who benefit the most are the ones who are the most committed to growing. So I have very large company and public company CEOs who are very experienced, and I have raw startup CEOs. Most of the CEOs are what I would say are first or second time CEOs because they recognize that they have many learning curves in front of them, and those are very steep learning curves. And it helps that I was a CEO for 25 years, and it helps that I coach only CEOs. So I want to share all the experiences from myself, but more importantly, from what I learned from every coaching experience with my CEOs. I share all those best practices because there are patterns that I can help the CEO identify, and I can say to them, this is probably what's going to happen if you go down this path. Let me share some best practices with you. Let me give you some tools to help deal with that. And this is what most CEOs are hungry for, is like, how does this work?
It makes so much sense as soon as you said that it's your most of your the people you're working with are it's maybe their second or third time doing this. It's interesting, maybe your first time doing this, it's like you don't know what you don't know. Your second
Right.
or third time, you do know what you don't know.
That's
And
right.
it's like, okay, I need a little bit of extra support, a little bit of extra guidance as I learn these things that I know I don't know.
Exactly. Exactly right.
Yeah. That's very interesting. I also want to talk a little bit about, I think you have a very interesting perspective as someone who has been a CEO, has worked with many CEOs, but has also been on the other side of the equation as a board member. Has that in any way kind of informed the way that you approach working with CEOs now?
Very much so. So let's talk about startup CEOs. So startup CEOs are typically the largest shareholder in the company. And that may continue even through a series A. But then there's a turning point where suddenly the CEO is a minority shareholder. And the board's first and most important job is to hire and fire the CEO. And that's a really interesting dynamic. So the founder goes from being the most powerful person in the company to someone who now has to address the needs of the board. And the really interesting thing about that is, as much as we would like the needs of the board to align perfectly with the needs of the CEO, they do not. Investors have different objectives than CEOs have. And so understanding these differences becomes critical in managing the relationship with the board.
Yeah, and I think you've just hit on something that is probably most CEOs' greatest fear, which is the worry that their board will fire them, right? It's that fear of losing control of your company. And I think, the fear of being fired is probably on the far end of that spectrum. But I think there's also this tendency to see a CEO board relationship as potentially contentious. Like, we hear a lot of rhetoric that's like, if my board weighs in, I'm not necessarily going to get to do the things that I want to do. Or, there's sort of this sacrifice mindset that founders feel they don't want to enter into when they're working with their board. And we hear that often as a reason that founders avoid building a board for as long as they can. And we spend a lot of time trying to educate people on, how your board can also be a massive asset. It's not a one-way relationship. It is give and take. But that also means that your board should be giving back to you. So I want to talk a little bit about kind of those relationships and what CEOs can do to build a positive relationship with their board from the onset. Or potentially improve a relationship with their board that maybe hasn't been ideal up to this point.
You're right. There's an interesting dynamic here. And in terms of relationships, some CEOs believe that there is this thing called the board, and they have to have a relationship with this thing called the board. Because we have to have qu quarterly or even more frequent board meetings, and there is an entity here that we need to prepare for and we need to serve and provide information to. That is true, but that's not what I would call a good relationship. A good relationship is understanding each board member individually, understanding what's important to each board member, and understanding how each board member could potentially add value. So, if we're going to raise money, we want smart money. We don't want dumb money. The reason we want smart money is because that investor, hopefully, has perspectives on the world, has experience that can bring value to the CEO. And so we want to understand what kind of value can each individual board member bring and how do we serve their needs? Because each board member typically has to report back to a partner committee on the health of that particular company and the potential success of that company. And so we have to think about the role of the board member and how does the CEO serve them? There's also a very interesting dynamic. There's not an easy answer to this one, which is what exactly is the CEO asking of the board in the board meeting? So I believe the most effective way to do this is for the CEO to walk in and say, here is the plan. Here is what we're going to do or plan to do and why we plan to do it. Now, board members, I would love to get your feedback and gain your insight from your knowledge and your experience about our plan, as opposed to presenting something and really putting a big question mark around it and saying, gee, we're really not sure what to do about this situation. That's a different dynamic. You may feel that way as a CEO going into the board meeting, but you don't want to present that way to the board.
Yeah, so there's that level of almost specificity of saying, I've put some thought into this. I've put effort into figuring out what I think the right way forward is. now this is the specific feedback I'm asking you for, rather than, that more just amorphous, open-ended, what do you think we should be doing? Is that
Exactly.
correct? Yeah.
Exactly. There's another element here of managing expectations. So, as a CEO, you need to be very careful about what numbers you put up on slides indicating what we're going to accomplish over the next quarter, because those numbers become the expectation of the board. And if you don't achieve those numbers, it's going to appear that you have failed. And guess what? Sometimes you're going to fail. So the question is, how do I manage the expectations of the board? One way is to be careful about putting what numbers you put up. And I suggest putting up ranges as opposed to a solid number. This is the revenue we're going to hit this quarter. And discuss that range with the board. The second thing is, as it relates to managing expectations, and I just did this the other day with one of my CEOs. Oh, we have some bad news. Let the board know now, early. Never surprise the board. Even if you're concerned you might have bad news, let the board know. Then they now have lowered their expectations for what's going to happen during the quarter, and you can manage against that lowered expectation. But if you surprise them at the end of the quarter by missing something that you committed to, they're not going to be happy about that.
Right. And I've heard the saying, there's no surprise is a good surprise during a board meeting. Like,
Right, right.
in a board meeting, everybody should already have the information that they need before the meeting starts.
That's right.
Yep. And it's interesting, how much of we're sort of talking about the relationship between a CEO and a board member and how much of it really comes at that like early stage of just how are you communicating? Are you being clear about your expectations? Are you clearly managing your board's expectations? What are you doing sort of day to day to make sure that your board is really in the loop on like what you're doing, what obstacles have come up, things like that. It sounds like so much of this really just boils down to your ability to communicate effectively.
Yes, and I want to add one other thing, which is, as a CEO, have you been clear to each individual board member about what your expectations are of them? That is not often discussed. There's just an assumption. And if the CEO is really smart about this, the CEO will understand that each board member can add value in a different way. And I'm going to ask, I might need you to make introductions. I might need you to help me figure out this particular tricky situation. I might need some advice from you, and to be clear about that with the board members so that they can lean in. Because for the most part, board members really do want to add value. They really do want to help because it's in their best interest to do so. Most of the time, they're going to react to the thing that the CEO puts into the spotlight. And so if that thing in the spotlight is something they can't help with, then they're not going to be able to help. Or if that thing in the spotlight is something that they're going to be upset about, we have to be really careful what we put into the spotlight. And if we're going to put something that's not good news into the spotlight, this is why we ask early, or sorry, we educate early. And we might ask a board member, how do I handle this particular sticky situation? We get advice from the board.
Yeah, and I think, talking about particularly delivering bad news is something that we know CEOs have a tendency to put off. It's not uncommon for people to sort of couch bad news and wait until the quarterly meeting, which, might be months away. And it sort of makes sense psychologically, right? There's a certain amount of pressure that CEOs feel to perform well in front of their board, to have the company doing really well. And nobody wants to be the bearer of bad news, right?
Right.
Do you have any advice for how to just like, I don't know, get more comfortable delivering bad news or specific tactics that can help sort of make those conversations more productive instead of feeling daunting?
Absolutely. Let's make it really simple. If I need to deliver bad news, I say, here is the bad news, and here is what I'm doing about it. So you need to bring the solution along with the bad news. And that needs to be well thought through. And that needs to be ready to be scrutinized by the board about that plan, about how to turn this around. And you don't want to promise that that bad news is going to go away just because I have a plan to make it go away. What we do want to promise is our effort to make that go away, because we don't know. In most cases, we don't know, but we might have a good plan. It could be, and we're going to, and I'm going to hire a new head of sales, could be my solution. So if we want the board to say, okay, I thought about it, that is a challenge, and that's probably a good solution. Or I have a better suggestion on another way to solve this problem. That's a good dialogue with the board when you have a challenge, you have a problem.
Yeah, and that's I love that you brought that up. You know, we've been sort of focusing on what CEOs can do, but it is interesting to think about the role of board members in this situation too. You know, what is the responsibility of a board member to weigh in on the plan? And sort of, it's almost a way of spreading out that accountability, right? Like, we've hit something that we didn't expect, we're course correcting, I've come up with a plan as a CEO, but we as a board and a company all need to buy into the plan in order for us to feel confident about moving forward. And if we can't all buy into it, we need to come up with a plan that we can get aligned behind. So kind of, I'm curious your perspective as a board member, how you see, like, how can board members be more useful or productive in those conversations too?
Well, I want to emphasize something. We're not always all going to agree, okay? What we're looking for is, let's call it primary agreement or some form of consensus. I would expect board members to disagree from time to time. And the dynamic we have to create is that's going to happen and we're going to be okay with that. If 3 out of 4 board members believe turning left is the right thing and one believes turning right, well, it's probably turning left is what's going to win the day. And that other board member needs to accept that, because we're never going to always agree on exactly what to do. So I'm sorry, that was, I wanted to make that point, but then what was the second half of that?
Yeah, the second half was, and I think that's a great point to clarify. And like, some disagreement is actually extremely healthy. I think it's also worth noting, like.
So that was your other point about as a board member. So the role, I think the role of the board member is to think strategically about the issues that are being presented and ask really great questions. So as a board member, I don't need to say, I think turning right is the right thing to do, and here's why. Rather, I might say, you know, in my experience, I've seen problems when we turn left. What are some of the opportunities that might be in front of us if we turn right? And create a dialogue that enables the group to solve a problem together. That, by the way, garners a lot more respect too. It opens up the conversation as opposed to slamming your fist on the table and saying, turning right is the only way to go. What we're trying to create is a dialogue and bring the best minds into the room in that period of time when we make a decision. That's the role of the board member.
Yeah, it's interesting how much, you know, there's sort of this need, it sounds like, to create a space with just in the entire context of working with your board, where people feel really comfortable being honest, sharing ideas, doing that more kind of vulnerable brainstorming. It sounds like maybe the worst thing that could happen is, you know, everybody just wants to agree so that nobody, you know, there's no risk, right? Like, you don't want to be in the position of minimizing risk within your board conversations. Like, you want to be having differing opinions, different ideas, consider different points of view.
Exactly.
And what that makes me think of is really, like, you need trust to be able to do that, right? And going back to the very beginning of this conversation, If you're going into this relationship afraid that your board is going to fire you, it's kind of the worst case scenario,
Yeah.
you're not coming from a position of trust, right? So how do you build that trust with your board members?
Well, the first way is you have to have integrity. So this ties together with setting expectations. And so if the board says, I really need you to achieve this particular objective or create this key result, you want to be really careful how you answer that question. You want to be really careful about the commitment you make. You might say, that's a stretch goal. I'm willing to sign up to try to meet that goal, but I want to set your expectations that we may not. I want to set your expectations at the beginning of the quarter, we may not make that goal. I know you really want that, Mr. or Mrs. Board member, but I can't promise that to you. Now, the board members may not like that, but it's better to have that discussion at the beginning of the quarter than at the end of the quarter when there was a 20% miss against the goal. And so we want to have integrity in our word. And so if I'm a board member now, and I know the CEO said they were going to do their best, but may not make it, my expectations are set and I trust that person's word. If the CEO says, absolutely, we can make that, I'm going to scratch my head right then and there and say, how can they be so confident? What are they really telling me? Are they just telling me that because they want to make me happy? But that's not going to work because if they can't achieve that, then I'm going to be very unhappy at the end of the quarter. So that's the first place I would start in building trust, is having a deep level of integrity.
Interesting. Yeah, and I just keep thinking of this idea as we're talking of like you never want to overpromise and underdeliver,
That's
right?
right. That's right.
And just I think it requires being realistic with yourself too. Like I imagine it must be common for CEOs to feel like, yeah, I really want to hit that. And there's part of me that thinks like, yeah, let's go for it. And it probably takes some practice to be realistic with yourself, even about what is attainable, what is realistic. Is there an element of this that, you've talked about sort of managing your board's expectations, but is there an element of managing your own expectations too?
Well, there is because the dynamic is often the board wants more than the CEO may believe is possible. And that's a healthy dynamic. But then the question is, how does the CEO operate in a world where they're feeling enormous pressure? A small number will actually thrive in that environment. Most are going to have a hard time in that environment. And so the goal setting process or the key result process is absolutely critical in enabling the CEO to perform at the highest level. And that's what I care about the most. So how do we get the CEO to perform at the highest level? And so there's a balance about how much they're willing to take on.
Yeah, interesting. I'm also just kind of thinking as we're talking about this, again, so much of this just seems centered around really strong communication practices. I'm curious in your perspective how much of that communication can and should happen during meetings as opposed to all the time in between meetings.
Most of it should happen in between meetings. So the meeting itself, in a perfect world, is a pretty efficient review of information and a discussion of topics that no one is surprised about. But it enables a group to come together and talk about, let's say, a strategic change in direction. But every board member should already know we're going to be having this discussion. So they have had time to think about it. They have had time to maybe have discussions about it, either amongst themselves or with their peers. They're more prepared. They feel better about entering the conversation and they're not surprised.
Yeah, so it's really about sort of de-emphasizing the meeting as your main communication touch point, shifting that communication to a more ongoing practice. And then kind of what's, in your opinion, what's the best thing a CEO can do to get like optimize the value they're getting out of those quarterly meetings.
It's the preparation beforehand, excuse me, beforehand to enable the board members to react after they're prepared as opposed to react in the moment. So this is why we tell the board about surprises, or we tell them so there are no surprises at the board meeting. We tell them about bad news early. We even tell them about good news early, but we let them know what's happening so that they come in and they, this is a chance to actually settle what I've learned over the last quarter and have a chance as a board member to add some value from a non-emotional standpoint. If I walk in and I'm upset because I'm surprised, I'm going to be emotional about that. And I'm not going to be able to add the kind of value that I would like to.
Yeah, that makes sense. I mean, it takes time to process information. It takes time to think about things critically. And, you know, trying to do that in real time during a meeting is probably not always going to yield your best results.
That's right.
Well, I want to be mindful of the time here. But before we wrap, are there any other tips, advice, insights you have for CEOs or board members, that you think people should know?
Look, I think what's important is that if there are differences, we bring them forth. Differences of opinion, differences of styles, and we don't pretend they don't exist. The CEO can say, I suspect you might want us to go in this direction. I'm going to be suggesting we go in this direction. And I know we disagree right now. Let's talk about this. Or a board member may want to come in and say, look, I have a different perspective, or I have a different way of thinking about this. Let's be okay with these differences because these differences, diversity of opinion, can be very powerful and helpful. But if we just recognize that that person thinks a different way than I do, I'm probably not going to listen to them. I'm not going to get value out of that conversation. So it's actually, I call it putting the differences on the table and saying, oh, I think this and you think that. That's interesting. I'll bet together we can help each other be more effective.
Interesting. So it's really about trying to see those differences as assets.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah, instead of potential sources of frustration that we don't see things the exact same way.
That's right.
Interesting. I think that's such good advice, probably not just for CEOs and board members, but probably for every team everywhere working together.
Yep, I think you're right.
Yep. Well, this has been fantastic. There's so much great information in here that I am sure founders and board members are going to find useful. So thank you for letting us pick your brain, and sharing your insight and expertise, as someone who does this all the time.
It's really fun, and I appreciate having the opportunity to have a conversation with you.
Yeah, well, we had a great time, so thank you.
You're welcome.